Blog Talk Radio.
It's that time, everyone. Hey, you know I'm rocking it. And we're on live. This is The Space Show with Al and Joe, and we're happy to be here on a Sunday. And of course, it's 18th of January. I mean, we're already more than halfway through the month of 2015. I mean, what is up with that? It's way too fast. Before we know it, it'll be Christmas again, people. You know, I said the same thing last year. Where did the year go? And here it's just flying by again. So, speaking of which, just talk about the calendar before I bring Al, since he's quickly stuffing his face. Oh, see. Well, Taiyokan had just wrapped up for the year, and that was in Mesa, and that was this weekend. So, hope that some of you got out at the anime con. I know I didn't. That's a whole other story. And next weekend, I don't have anything on next weekend. Can you freaking believe that? Except for our show, of course, on the 25th. And so that will be, again, same bad channel, same bad time, 7 p.m. on 25th of next Sunday. And then Hate Girl Show we've got on 28th, which is Wednesday. So it's a week and a half from today. And that starts at, we are featuring the American Longspurs. I call them a boy band. Yeah, three guys and all instruments. I like that kind of stuff. So, American Longspurs. I'm going to have some eye candy. I don't know about you. And that'll be from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. And that will be at the Timeout Lounge on Mill Avenue and Southern in Tempe. So, come on out. I'm not going to tell you what to drink, but you drink whatever you want. And listen to some live music, because you know that this doesn't happen all the time, especially on a Wednesday. So, got that. Now, then, Glendale Chocolate Fair is the weekend of the 30th and 31st. And that would be, of course, at Glendale, because it's Glendale Chocolate Fair. And I know a lot of romance writers are going to be out there. Hey, girls. And this is awesome. Have fun. And then February. Oh, man, February. We've got the book launch party for Clusters. And that's going to be at if you guys are interested in that particular information, definitely personal message me on Facebook at pj.holtstrand. And if you don't spell my name right, you're not going to find me. HULTSTRAND. I had somebody do that this week. They said, I couldn't find you anywhere. And I said, really? I mean, you Google me and you can find me almost anywhere. They said, oh, we didn't find you anywhere on Google. And I said, well, did you spell my name right? Well, how do you spell it? And sure enough, that was the problem. So that happens. See, it's two T's in my name, people. You want to find out what I'm doing, you've got to spell the name right. So that's going to be on the 5th Friday. We're going to do that on Friday. So it's first launch party. And then, hey, you know what's coming up? I know what's coming up. You guys maybe not. Maybe don't know what's coming up, but Amazing Arizona Comic Con is going to be at the Phoenix Convention Center. And 13th, 14th, and 15th, and Arizona Publishing Service, as well as WAD Media, is going to be out there. And we'll just have fun all weekend. So I'm not sure where our table is yet, so as soon as we find out, I'll let you guys know. And come on out. And I don't know, we'll figure out some way to spin a wheel. Have fun. Throw some stuff around. I know that Don Jock's going to be out with his book, and so we are going to have just such a good time. Weekend after that, publishing and marketing meetup. We had one yesterday that just, it was a packed room, people. So all talking about publishing and networking with other people and finding your niche and writing and, oh my goodness, books, books, books. So that's on the 21st, always the third weekend, unless, of course, I'm busy, then I have to move it. And then we've got, well, Galaxy Fest is coming, and that's going to be in Colorado area. And the Prepper Fest Expo is going to be in Tucson on February 28th through March 1st. I'm not going to say nothing about that one. Okay. Who's Review Prepper? That's awesome. TM Williams has another sales and marketing class at the Phoenix Library on February 28th. I'm not sure of that time yet. And then also that same day, the PRWC mini conference for teachers. If you're a teacher, you should go to this conference to find out new ways and strategies for teaching. So that's through February, people. And if I miss something, let me know. And I will add it to our freaking large calendar here. And Al decided to duck into the other room. So I'm going to have to stretch out the information. I think I can probably do that. Just remember, we're going to talk a little bit about the show. This is a manned space show. So if you have want to call in, we would love to have you call in, but we don't talk about religion. We don't talk about abortion. We don't talk about politics. We talk about manned space. So the call-in number is 714-242-5145. While we might have opinions on those other things, we try to keep it just about space. So 714-242-5145. We welcome your calls. We actually dare you to call. We would love you to call. And just, because we'd like to talk, obviously. Otherwise, we wouldn't be on radio. Are you ready?
I am a guy. I am always ready.
Yeah, that's what you say. And we're already like 8 minutes into the show, and I've been talking the whole time for you.
Well, yeah.
It's been a busy week.
That, well,
has it been?
Somewhat. I mean,
somewhat.
there's always stuff going on.
Oh, yes, I am. Kind
One of the things that I kind of like is that because our focus is strictly on manned space flight news,
Yeah.
There's a lot of other stuff going on. There's astronomy, there's satellite launches and things and research they're doing on climate,
Prepper?
Prepper stuff.
Prepper stuff.
There is something for everybody out there to keep track of, to watch, to stay on top of. We focus on manned space flight news, what's going on, and as an adjunct to that, I try to follow some of the other technology tracks that exist. Anything that contributes or could contribute to manned space flight, be it in low Earth orbit, out to the moon, out to Mars, or heaven forbid, out to the moons of Jupiter or beyond.
Would that be cool?
It would be very cool. And so we do focus on a very specific area of space news in that regard. Now, we also, for those of you new to the show, we do specifically focus on things that are fairly recent. We try to keep the news to what's been happening in the past week.
Where's the file again? What's the file
The
name?
next space in Weavers. Okay, you've been doing this how long and you forgot where the script
I've
is?
been in and out of this thing like too many times, going back and forth from book to book, and just like brain fried, people. So I'm good now. I'm where I'm supposed to be. That's what they
Well,
say. You're always you're
this
exactly
is
where you're supposed to be.
yeah.
There we are.
So anyway, to get back on track, we have several areas that we keep a watch on during the course of the week. And, you know, so our categories for our discussion on our tracking tonight are NASA news relative to space flight, or manned space flight. There's international news. There's news about new space or private space companies and so forth. And then there's a section that we do call related tech, which covers issues and or technology related to manned space flight. Now, just because something, anything that could affect manned space flight doesn't necessarily mean that that affects manned space flight only, but that it's a critical issue that we will face as we begin to move outwards into low Earth orbit and beyond.
Also, just a late note that we do include the links in which he's talking about into the chat right below your information about the show. Copy and paste, go into the links, follow along. It's one of the services we give you. That way you guys can say, hey, he's not just whistling out of anything out of his mouth. He's actually has found this stuff on the internet and is keeping you abreast of all the different places that can possibly have manned space news.
There you go. So, without further ado, distractions.
Well, I'm quite sure that's not true.
Or otherwise uninteresting fluff. Let us begin.
Are you calling me uninteresting fluff?
No, you're a girl. You're fluff no matter what.
I'm definitely never not interesting. That's a double negative.
There you go. Okay, first on our list, the International Space Station is returning to normal following a reported ammonia leak this week. Now, earlier this week, apparently there was an alarm about the possibility of an ammonia leak on the International Space Station. As a result, the U.S. and international astronauts moved over to the Russian segment in order to give engineers on the ground time to assess the situation. And ultimately, they determined that there really wasn't an ammonia leak, at least not inside. So they're still working on figuring out what went wrong there. And in the process, we begin to get
tripped a fire alarm.
Somebody tripped a fire alarm. Yeah, it must have been one of the kids going down the hallway.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
Just pulling a joke or some initiation to get into it.
Ammonia leak! Ammonia leak!
Yeah. Everybody wants to yell fire in the movie theater. Anyway, so they're actually getting back to normal. Everybody's getting comfortable back into things. And one of the things that they're doing is they get back to work, studying the immune system in space. Now, flight controllers determined there was no leak, so they allowed the crew to resume their activities. And this week, the residents kicked off several new experiments delivered Monday morning aboard the SpaceX commercial craft that arrived. Now, Italian astronaut Samantha Cristoforetti worked in Japan's Kaibo lab module feeding fruit flies for an experiment that will observe how long microgravity affects the immune system, while NASA astronaut Terry Virts sets up bacteria kits inside the Destiny Labs microgravity science glove box for an experiment that explores the risk of infectious disease in space. And, you know, that's an important thing to keep in mind. If one person happens to come up with either a dormant or early stages of any kind of illness or disease, and that is infectious, you can just about kiss most of the astronauts goodbye, because there is no real, they don't have the kind of medical care available that we do down here. So that presents a real big risk. So covering these things also engenders information that relates to what's going on or what will be going on in the near future. Okay, my system is slowing way down. Are we connected? We are still connected? We're still good? Okay. All right. So, moving on to our international space news. Russia. Okay. Russia, and you know, take this with a grain of salt, guys, because in the last several months, we have had a boatload of news articles, both positive and negative, coming out of Russia about what Russia's going to do next. We've got them, I mean, they just recently launched, did their first test launch of their new Angara rocket. But we're hearing things, I mean, the rumor mill is just going nuts with their economy struggling right now,
yeah.
With all the things that are going on in Ukraine, with everything else that Russia is being challenged with these days. The idea of the Russians moving forward and doing different projects is questionable, because we're hearing multiple stories both up and down on a lot of these. And this one is, of course, no different. Now, according to the article, Vladimir Putin's given his preliminary approval for the development of the Russian-designed rocket capable of lifting a record 150 tons of cargo into orbit. Similar projects, such as the SLS from NASA and Elon's Big Dumb Rocket, basically the Falcon Heavy and above. Now, the news comes on the back of successful test launch of the long work they've been doing on the Angara rocket earlier this summer. That rocket, which is capable of delivering up to 35 tons into LEO in its most powerful modification. And, of course, it was the first launch vehicle developed entirely after the fall of the Soviet Union. Now, keep in mind that the Soyuz system that's been in place since Yuri Gagarin, which would be back in the early late 50s. So we're talking a 50-year history for this ship.
Yeah. They built it right the first time, apparently.
Well.
I'm sure they made some modifications.
There have been modifications over the years, but the Soviets built a solid workhorse, and it's done a great job over these last 50 years. The Angara is, as I understand it, to be the Soyuz successor. And, of course, this new rocket that they're talking about building, designing from scratch and building, is seemingly a response to the construction of the SLS at NASA and the Falcon Heavy and its successor after that from SpaceX. Now, there's also talk from the Russians of many different directions that they could take when the ISS reaches its production lifetime end in 2020 or 2024. There are talks of them cutting their modules loose from the space station and using those as a core for a new station. There's talk of the Russians continuing to support the ISS in its current configuration and adding to it. There's also talk of them scrapping a lot of stuff and starting a whole new one from scratch. So it'll be interesting to see how these things play out. We generally don't get too much into future announcements much, but I do like to at least keep up on these things, make sure everybody's aware of what could be coming down the pike. We all know about the wonderful thing that Microsoft got in the habit of doing back in the 80s of delivering vaporware. And so a lot of times these are vapor promises from Russia and NASA and things about doing stuff that they may or may not be able to do in the coming years.
Due to funding.
Somebody decides to invade the Ukraine, so that kind of slows things up a bit. Oil producers in the U.S. start doing fracking, and despite all the potential problems that it causes, gas prices get cut in half in less than a year. And the Russians,
Well, we like that.
All sorts of consequences with the Russian economy, as well as other OPEC producers. Moving on to new space. An interesting article that comes up every now and again. We see a repeat of this article, or at least
sex and space.
And, you know, it's a topic everybody loves to consider talking about. And, you know, space.com put this article out. This is a year old. Why did I end it up with it? I guess I goofed. This is one that shouldn't have gotten into my list, but...
All right, we'll talk about it anyway, because this sucks.
It wouldn't surprise me that we talked about this last year about this time.
Oh, probably. Something like
it. But, you know, sex and space, it's a great topic to discuss because everybody wants to know how it could work.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I was reading this, I actually came up with a great way. You ready for this?
No, I'm sure not. I'm sure I'm not ready for
it. It's really quite simple. The mechanics of coitus are simply you immobilize, you basically don't immobilize, but you secure one of the bodies, and the other body gets handholds to have at them.
Okay. That's,
all right?
That's probably enough.
That's probably enough.
Yeah.
So, well, you know, who's to say that you don't have a lovemaking belt in orbit? And you pick a spot in the wall, your belt catches the wall, and your partner grabs the
okay.
hooks in the belt, and
okay.
off you go.
This is
all right?
PG-13.
This is PG. So, I mean, there's a simple and straightforward alternative. Velcro, everybody's favorite tool, right? Don't we just love Velcro? How many times have you sitting somewhere?
You're going to totally get us in trouble here.
How many times have you been just getting ready to sit down and some numbskull behind you reaches down to their fanny pack and goes, rip, with their Velcro, right? And you're thinking, oh my God, I've ripped my trousers. I've ripped my pants. Or I've ripped my armpit or something like this. And of course, it makes you all self-conscious, you know.
Oh, my goodness.
How many times have we had that done? But Velcro,
man,
fun
stuff. I think we totally went out to another space tour here. But
well,
what was the actual article about? Wasn't it about childbirth and things like that?
Well, there are all sorts of issues when we talk about sex and space. And, of course, it's one thing to think about having interpersonal relationships in space that could result in a pregnancy. More than likely, the people that are going to be up there are going to have a sense of, we're not ready for this yet. And so there are going to be some precautions taken for a large number of the people that go up into orbit
sure,
into space. But
I know some women who take all the precautions and all they have to do, some guy look at them and they get pregnant.
Yeah, there are those.
Yeah.
There are those. Okay. And under those circumstances, we still need to really look at what are the issues
okay.
for pregnancy in space. And actually... The curious thing is that there are several experiments on the International Space Station that actually look at the issues that could be faced by gestating creatures growing in either eggs or in their wombs and so forth. And part of this is the fruit fly. They're looking at the potential for genetic anomalies. They're looking at deliberate anomalies inserted. They're looking at many different things and how does the environment affect the flies and so on and so forth. So definitely some interesting things to consider as we go forth. Because, you know, one of the things in the article that it addresses is the idea, what is the lack of gravity going to do to a baby in the womb?
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm sitting here thinking, you know, gravity doesn't really affect the baby in the womb until it's time for it to be born.
And
it's already floating.
Right, but the thing is that lately they've been doing a whole lot more births in water.
Right.
So they be floating anyway.
Right.
When they come out.
Well,
it's the growing part that might be a problem.
Yeah. I mean, given the radiation environment, the atmospheric environment, which
well,
is a mix of gases.
The gravity issue.
And the gravity issue. So these definitely things to keep a watch on, folks, as we move forward. Our next article, we've been watching with interest all of the political shenanigans that are going around, and it's fascinating to watch the wheels turn around the world. In the United States, we had the crash and burn, basically, on liftoff of the Antares a couple of months ago. And it was considered to be an issue in that launch failure was believed to be the RD-180 or 181 rocket engines. And, of course, there was this big flurry of activity in the United States to, okay, now we got to ban the RD-180. Okay, ULA, you've got to go find new engines, and you should plan on giving us a new engine in 1 or 2 years. And they're firing back, well, it's going to take 10 years and billions of dollars to develop a new engine. And, you know, it's fascinating how the wheels of commerce and the wheels of politics do not operate at the same speed. Ergo, what we end up with is this article, which is an interesting read. Russia and the U.S. sign a $1 billion contract on RD-181 rocket engine deliveries. And the gist of it is that the U.S. has agreed that Orbital Sciences can acquire another couple of shipments of RD-181 rocket engines for launches on their boosters for the price, as long as they don't send them up on military spacecraft. Now, the interesting thing to remember is that a large majority of Orbital Sciences, or ULA's, launches are military.
Okay.
And so you don't think they're going to slide a few in there if they need to get a launch up?
Oh, well, you bet.
You know, so read the whole article to get a really good grasp on
the,
what is actually happening.
The lunacy of the situation, yeah.
Right. I mean, and of course, the other thing is that this contract is one aspect of cooperation between a Russian company and the United and a United States company. So it's more commerce than it is politics, but it'll be affected by that. The article suggests that the contract is focused on cooperation within 15 to 25 years. The ISS is due for review and decisions. It's now 2015. So within 5 years, NASA and its international partners have to make their final decision on that. So then that's going to affect these relations that we're having. The issues in Ukraine affect those things. So, yeah, a lot of stuff's going on. A lot of exciting stuff to keep track of these days. Now, as we continue forward on our news space, Elon Musk has just been burning the midnight oil.
Poor guy.
He's got quite the staff to help him do this, too. now, for most of us interested in spaceflight in general and in SpaceX in particular, because SpaceX holds the promise to be our primary number one cheapest delivery service provider to space, not only for the satellites and the cargo that they're delivering the ISS now, but hopefully within a couple of years, astronauts, and hopefully after that, regular people to go to space. Now, on Saturday last, not yesterday, but the Saturday before, we watched and waited for information about not only that the Dragon cargo unit reached the ISS, but also how their booster landing test went. And during the course, you know, when it didn't quite hit the mark, they were off by about, I'm guessing on the video, about 150 feet, give or take. And this was basically, they had some troubles in the upper atmosphere and some hydraulic failures, so some of the control fins didn't quite keep the rocket vertical. And so when she came down at a slight angle, and it made a real mess all over the deck.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's
and a few days later, we actually got to see some video of the rocket actually hitting the side of the barge, which was really interesting when you consider the potential for damage. You know, we've seen rockets explode on the launch pad, and the pad, and the rocket, and the fuel depot, and it's so much just literally goes up in flames in that fireball. And yet this thing hits the side of the rocket of the booster landing pad, and yeah, there's some damage, but the ship still gets back to port on its
hard to believe considering the blast that we saw.
Yeah,
that was.
But at the same time, the thing to remember is that SpaceX has taken great pains to minimize the risks all the way along. By the time the rocket gets to the ground, when it lands on the deck, there's very little fuel left in that ship. Very little.
That's good.
And
it's still a pretty good fireball.
It was. But that's just one of the things. The fact of the matter is,
not to make any Sylvester Stallone movie just proud.
Yeah. It's an expendable. I've watched all week as the banter and the comments and the various different other follow-on articles came up. Oh, it was a failure. Then it was a success. Then it was a failure. Oh, it was a partial success. It was a partial failure. The bottom line is his goal was to get the doggone rocket close. The goal was to land the rocket on the barge.
Which it did have. That happened.
No, they didn't. They didn't land on the barge. It hit the barge.
Well, yeah, it hit the barge, but...
Okay, and it didn't actually hit it dead on.
It didn't technically
land. Yeah, I mean, but here's the thing. When you think about it, no lights. There were no landing lights.
Yeah.
There's no lights on the rocket to guide it in.
Yeah.
It's pitch dark out there. Apparently,
if it didn't blow up, it wouldn't have saw it at all.
There you go. That's true. That's an interesting point. I hadn't thought about that. But
did they land? I can't see it.
But the bottom line is, the attempt to land the booster on the craft also had several other aspects that were new to this particular landing. Mm-hmm. The fins that they added at the top of the rocket are relatively new. The hydraulic fluid that they use is actually the rocket fuel. I didn't know that. So they save enough of the rocket fuel. It goes up into there, and then it's piped down into the engines. And then the landing gear. But most of it worked. Most of it. If it weren't for that pneumatic fluid failure on the fins above, mm-hmm. if that ship could have maintained its vertical orientation, she'd have probably landed on deck right on target. So the next time they come through, they're going to pump out a little bit more hydraulic fluid for those fins so that they can stay... intact and
now they know more.
Now they know more, yeah. And that's the beauty of this. This is only their third vertical landing attempt. Period.
Yeah.
And you know if you're gonna jump off a 62-mile cliff,
oh sure,
and hit a particular target in the dark, they're doing pretty good.
And if I remember right, it also had some kind of fog issue.
There was fog as well.
So,
again, all these things made it really difficult to see the ship as it came down and so forth. And again, while some of the articles say, and the video is being showed here on the article link, so check it out. all things considered, for the first try to get on the barge, they did it. I mean,
they got on the barge.
And technically, Falcon did hit its target. The article says, technically, Falcon did hit its target just at the wrong angle and a bit off center. And that's true. But it was...
A little more proud of the people.
Yeah. We need to remember that stuff, it's not always as easy. This is rocket science. And this stuff ain't easy. This stuff is not easy. All right, moving on. The subject gets more interesting.
Oh, boy.
And the question at the top of the article...
Space junk.
No, you're in the wrong one.
No, you didn't need that one.
Oh, I did miss one. How about that? Well, let's go to space junk.
Technician is always right.
Uh-huh. All right, let's get that one. You got that one up there?
I got it up, yeah.
All right. We'll talk about space junk. Now, this is a recurring problem. And, this problem ain't going to go away easy. We have up in orbit a huge junkyard. I mean, I got 22,000 pieces of junk.
Yeah, that totally freaks me out, man.
And here's the thing to consider. That's the junk. I tried to find
that are actually working.
I tried to find a reference that gave an estimate of the actual number of satellites in orbit as well for comparison, and I couldn't find one. There's probably a link out there if somebody knows one.
Send
us a text.
I remember you had a picture in the paper before of just literally dots of all the junk around.
It looked like a fuzzy picture.
Yeah.
There were so
many
dots.
So much.
And this problem is getting worse. And in fact, the article discusses something that we all need to be concerned about in that there is a domino effect. And we saw this in the last couple of years with a couple of impacts. And before that, China's satellite destruction that they tested. You know, they blew up one of their own satellites.
Yeah, I heard.
They destroyed it. And these things are triggering cascade impacts.
Remember that movie, Gravity?
Oh, yeah.
That's what I thought.
Man, she looks hot in underwear. I couldn't resist. I just had to throw that out there.
George Clooney thinks he's funny.
Yeah. Anyway, but in Gravity, we see in Gravity, despite the oddities that they put together, they put Shenzhou, they put a Russian space station, and they put the ISS up in orbit all at the same time, plus the space shuttle. When the space shuttle wasn't around, it has been gone before they even put Tiangong space shuttle or space station up from China. So, despite those things, it was a great movie. It was really a great movie. She did a great. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. You know. So, but that movie actually demonstrates the potential catastrophic effects of space shuttle debris, or not space shuttle debris, but space debris.
Yeah.
And in fact, the article points out that in October, the ISS had to be moved to avoid a hand-sized piece of Russia's Cosmos 2251 satellite, which broke up after colliding with another satellite back in 2009. I mean, the lesson here is that's 6 years ago? So one of these pieces, I mean, they can take 6 to 10 years before they get around to a point where everything comes together and bam, it becomes catastrophic.
Yeah. And you're thinking, okay, how much did it cost us to move the space station just to avoid this piece of junk? So you got to consider all that.
Well, yeah, there's the calculations, you know.
It's
fuel. That's what it costs. And the fuel's in the ATV and it's paid for.
It still costs us money to move an entire station to avoid space junk, okay?
True. Okay, now we get to the one I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, I know you wanted to talk about this one.
Particularly for preppers, they'll like this. Recycle. What's that phrase? Reuse, recycle, recycle, reuse,
renewable.
Yeah, recycle, reuse. I forget what the phrase goes. There's the three R's basically. NASA's working on
refuse,
a poo powered. Spaceship. More to the point, what they're working on.
It was going
to
happen.
Yeah. More to the point, the article goes into some detail. They've developed a way to harvest multiple
good things. They've always been full of it.
Well, there's that. by working on the idea of an anaerobic biogas generating, anaerobic digestion. What do they call this thing? It's a process we've known about for a long time. in science circles.
Failed. Just call it a thing.
Well, yeah. There's an image down towards the center of the article. They talk about how using anaerobic digestion, you can take the active solids as well as the liquids from people and generate biogas, as well as water and other byproducts that we actually need to survive.
Called a poo-powered spaceship.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Right.
That's what
now,
it says, guys.
Here's the deal. Even though they can generate fuel, the quantities that we're getting at this point are interesting, to say the least. In the article, they talk about the process
not,
produces
maybe they're not
about...
getting enough poo up there.
actually, when you consider that his process produces about 200 gallons of non-drinkable water that can be used for radiation protection or purified into drinkable form. Where is it? They talk about... they mention how much poo a crew could develop. And over the course of a year, it's a huge number. It really is.
Yeah.
and they've got a picture of the
prototype.
They've got
to put it somewhere.
They've got to put it somewhere. Although, I got to tell you, the picture of that toilet seat is scary as all get out.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I would want to sit on that.
I don't think you're supposed to. I think that's supposed to open... for some reason.
I hope so. Well, yeah. Oh, yeah, probably. you guys got to actually look at that website.
That picture is really interesting. That's definitely an engineer's
nightmare.
Baby.
Yeah. He's like, oh, it's so pretty.
Yeah. That center, the knob for that little hatch just scares the bejeebus out of me.
I know.
You know, but, you know, you do what you need to do.
I that way, you know?
Yeah. So... But anyway, moving on in our private space flight news, Elon Musk is in the news
again.
He's in the news again. Is anybody surprised?
Is it stop.
Anybody surprised? This is a very short.
Attention grabber.
Yeah, this is a very short stub article. I'm sure if you Google, you can find others. I know I did. Elon has really been pulling out all the stops. He's actually started work on his Hyperloop test track. Did you know that? They actually built a test track for the Hyperloop, or it's in progress.
No,
also, he has started
He sleeps. I think that he's probably already become a robot, and that's why he can do so many things.
Well, I think the pod bots have hit him. I think the pod bots got to him.
Yeah.
There's no way anybody can produce as much. But anyway, he's producing some really exciting things. One of the things that this particular article addresses is the idea of his proposal, and actually there's a couple of people doing this. Virgin Galactic just this week announced their intent to do something similar, a competing close to Earth orbiting satellite network to extend internet access literally to everybody. But we know what happens when somebody promises it to everybody. It just costs more. But Elon and Richard Branson are both proposing the launching, and they're developing separate plans to build a more robust, a more reachable internet that would be faster, bigger, cheaper.
And connected to the third world.
And connected to the third world. Now, Elon Musk goes a step further and suggests...
We need to start selling books to them.
Books to who?
The third world. That way, you know, we get in on the market there.
Well, yeah. Okay. Where was I? Oh, Elon Musk, his internet plans don't stop at Earth orbit. He's talking about using these satellites to be able to reach out to the moon, to Mars...
Of course.
And perhaps farther, should we venture that far.
Well, he's looking ahead for when he actually, you know, when they do get to the moon and Mars.
Well, he wants to have his villa on the Mars ocean.
He wants
ocean.
To be able to talk to somebody other than himself and his crew that happen to be there on Mars.
That's right. He's looking to spend $10 billion on broadcasting internet signals from satellites in space. And he talked about this in an interview.
That's the ultimate long-distance call.
It really is. But here's the thing. You got to realize we're already using satellites for our internet today. Most of the signals go via satellite today, whether it's GPS, whether it's internet, whether it's TV, telephone. Almost everything's going that way. In fact, I remembered when I got my new phone not too long ago, I was astounded by the impression that I got that the rate structures in most plans today are built around data. And in fact, a technician mentioned that most voice calls go through data now anyway.
Yeah, that makes sense, actually, based on how that works.
Yeah, it does.
That explains, you know, how they're able to capture the voice and do words out of them.
Using data systems is much less expensive than trying to use the analog systems.
I'm quite sure I said it wrong, but yeah, you get the idea.
Well, the analog radio signals actually take more energy than do digitals, because digital signals can be compressed much easier, much simpler. They can also be far more accurate, far cleaner, because they use a lot less data, blah, blah, blah. So what he's got, he's proposing some interesting things. And again, it's one more thing that helps to create interest in what he is doing, and also what could be coming down the pike, we all hope, very soon. Next on our list, there's a new report out. Check out this article from the Space Reporter. They talk about the moon's resources are of, quote, potential economic interest. Now, many of you have been listening for a while, or at least on occasion, have heard me talk about
whenever you happen to
the difference in the approaches to the resources that we see on the moon. We know they're there. We know there's water ice there. We know there's oxygen. We know there's all sorts of precious metals up there, titanium, aluminum, all these types of things to be had for the taking, assuming you can get whatever equipment personnel up there to do the mining. But what this article points out, which is something new in the community. It's something I've been talking about for years in comment groups, chat groups, and things like this. And that is that...
Anybody who'll listen to you.
Anybody who'll listen to me. Now, what they talk about is the article points out that rather than nominate a single lunar resource as a potential impetus for economic exploration, this gentleman named Ian Crawford from the Department of Earth Planetary Sciences at Birkbeck College, University of London, says that the totality of the moon's resources do not represent a significant and worthwhile target. The key to evaluating the moon's potential resources is in its geology. Probes, landers, sample and return missions have furthered our understanding of lunar geology. Now, the lunar surface is divided into two basic units. You got the highlands and you got the lowlands. All right? We've all heard about that. Now, the distribution of stuff in the younger, darker lowlands areas that flowed into the huge basins, and then the highlands are overlain by the relatively thin regolith or lunar dust. Now, that dust has got a lot of stuff in it. You got the helium. You've got water ice concealed in craters. You've got oxygen, metals, iron, titanium, aluminum, silicon, and rare earth elements such as thorium and uranium. Now, he suggests that lunar resources, once extracted, and here's the bugger, guys, could be of use to a base or other infrastructure on the moon itself. Now, using the moon's resources will necessitate international cooperation, a legal framework that would encourage investment and avoid conflict, of course. But the idea of sending these resources back to Earth is questionable.
Yeah. Well, we talked about that.
Yeah. Many times, actually. Mm-hmm. I'm a firm believer that you extract resources on the moon unless there is a very compelling business reason to send it back down into Earth.
Yeah. It's the
cost to the marketplace is still going to be huge.
Yeah.
Well, far away above what it would be otherwise. And the technologies just haven't been completely developed yet to create that delivery system. So, and an interesting article I found, they do give a link out to the actual report. Or they did. Where's it at? I know I saw it. Yeah, there it is. So check it out. Cool, interesting reading. And we are now at our point where it's time for a break. My voice is starting to crack.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and give the link for what we're going to be talking about. That way, perhaps you guys have, you know, guys have a few minutes here while he gets a drink. And that way, you'll know what we're going to talk about and perhaps
call in. And I'll give you a quick heads up.
I'll
give you a quick heads up.
Okay.
There was a LinkedIn article or a LinkedIn post this past week about an organization seeking volunteers to participate in a study regarding isolation. Mm. Now, one of the things that struck me about this post was that the guidelines, the requirements for participants was so narrow and specific.
Very rigid, yeah.
Very, very rigid. And this is just a general study. This, you know, I cannot understand why.
Are we going to have to go ahead and go?
No. Oh. There are things that I don't understand why NASA continues to create rigid structures like this when we need to start broadening the range of people that we put through testing on these things. We're never going to get the answers that we need from the broader base of society until we do something more. So when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about that.
Okay, 2 minute break, everyone.
We'll see you in a few moments.
Click on it and find out, and then be prepared to call in or underneath the information about the actual, you know, where we're at right now. In the chat, if you don't want to call in or don't have the capability of calling in, definitely put in your questions or comments into the chat area. Phone number is 714-242-5145, and we're going to take a 2 minute break and we'll be right back.
Why don't you come on out to the Hey Girls Americana radio show, hosted by Song River and Carol Pacey of Carol Pacey and the Honey Shakers. All coming to you live on KWOD Independent Internet Radio, broadcasting from the Ice House Tavern in Phoenix, Arizona. All sound recorded and mixed by Vintage Note Records. Come on out, check out the show, and then visit the website at blogtalkradio.com/KWOD radio. We'll see y'all out there.
It's a K-Wed radio. And I were just in there talking, and all of a sudden I look at the screen, and it's dead air. Sorry about that, guys. We're on live again, K-Wed Radio, and this is Patty Holstrin, and we are at the next space show with Al and Joe. Hi, I'm Joe. And
here you go.
Hello. Hello.
Let me get my speaker right here. Okay. So we were talking about your commentary.
And on the commentary tonight, there was, as I said before, there was a post in the National Space Society group this past week, a call out for volunteers needed for a 14-day isolation simulation experiment at NASA JSC in Houston. Now, what caught my attention was, is I actually saw, like, it caught me by surprise. There were a total of 14 comments on this. And they put phone number and contact names of the people in charge of the sign-ups and volunteers for the project, which seemed pretty cool. I mean, I hadn't seen one before online like this, and it's probably just because I've missed it. But one of the things that caught my attention as I read through the brief post is... volunteers must pass a JSC physical, be 26 to 55 years old, have a BMI of 29 or less, be 74 inches or less in height, with no history of sleepwalking or use of sleep aids. Subjects,
that pretty much cuts out everybody.
Yeah. Subjects should have an advanced degree or equivalent years of experience. Subjects will be given a psychological test as part of the screening. Now, that's the part that got my attention, because these, I mean, you're really limiting the kinds of people you're going to get in a test like this.
Yep.
Professional people, advanced degrees, and yet, if you're doing something that is an isolation test, why should it always be about engineering? Unless, and even so.
Well, what this does is have the elitism again.
And I think
just
that's
cuts out the normal, you know.
And honestly, that's what I felt.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, and in defense of NASA, I can understand that perhaps the test. And the challenges that these people will be put under during the 14-day period in testing isolation simulation are going to be using really technical equipment.
So you need
to have an understanding of that.
Well, yes, but you can still train somebody. And the thing is that, you know, they're assuming that just because you have no college degree that you're, you know, too ignorant to run a machine, which is not
well,
true.
There is that suggested assumption. But, yeah, the thing that I was thinking in terms of is it's less about the qualifications of, quote, an average Joe who could come in and do this without an advanced degree.
All right.
The advanced degree is the thing that really kind of bit my craw.
Yeah.
They're talking about a body mass index of 29 or less. I can understand the 74 inches or less in height. I mean, that's just a little over 6 foot.
Well, because their spaceships only go...
Well, not only that, but the broad range of people is under 6 feet. Your average person is 5'9 to 5'11.
Yeah.
So that's a no-brainer.
Right.
But this bit about having to have an advanced degree or equivalent years of experience... I really think that this is a shame, because if you're testing for isolation, you're testing for motor skills, you're testing for the ability to just generally function in the environment and perform tasks to measure that.
Right.
These don't necessarily have to be advanced degree tasks.
No.
You know, the ability to take readings, the ability to write, the ability to compose on a computer, the abilities to be able to visually detect things. These are skills that everybody is going to need to be able to do. We're all going to need to be able to understand how to overcome the challenges of isolation, how to go overcome the challenges of sudden decompression.
Yeah.
And, you know, to illustrate my point, I remember in military training for the Air Force, we had to undergo a series of tests in the service as a function of our initial training, where we had to be exposed to a sudden decompression. We were tested to see if our motor skills would remain intact or for how long they would. We were tested on being able to stay awake in the lowered air pressure. And the guidelines were that you had to be able to perform at a certain skill level for a certain period of time in order to survive. Mm-hmm. And that's what they were looking for. It was survival. Now, NASA's been at this business for 50-plus years now. And I would think that the focus would begin to slide towards finding out what we need to know about sending the average person into space, the person that doesn't have the advanced degree but has mining skills, or maybe they've got geological study skills, the ability to be a geologist and study the strata, the ability for a person to just operate as a medic, which is about all we're going to have up there for a long time. We won't be having surgeons and hospitals and clean rooms. And I guess I get frustrated sometimes that NASA doesn't seem to have an interest in broadening the scope of the experiments to include more people so that you get a broader range of results.
Yeah.
And it does give the impression of elitism.
Yeah.
If you're not a military pilot between 5'9 and 5'11 with multiple advanced degrees
and under 55 years of age.
Yeah.
And still buff.
You still got to be in pretty good condition.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a challenge. And I think we as...
And on top of that, she'll be interested. They'll be interested in doing that.
But,
you know,
we did have Senator John Glenn went up in his 70s and
right.
spent time at the
but
space
the
station.
But he'd already be cut out because he's too old for it.
And, you know, I remember, I definitely remember that was part of the conversation when he went up.
Yeah.
There was concern about his age,
yeah.
his physical condition.
Yeah.
And yet he did just fine.
He probably takes enough sleep aids.
He was one of our first astronauts, so.
I know.
And I think it's a wonderful, thrilling experience to have been able to go back into space in his later years.
Yeah.
And I imagine for him it must have, I could imagine it being thrilling just to be there, much
yeah.
less the challenges yeah. that he faced.
Yeah.
I
imagine he would.
And yet, you know, this is a man who has kept himself in pretty good shape throughout his life. He may not have faced any challenges or anything serious. He may have been just fine up there, like a kid back in a swimming pool after 2 years away from the water, you know?
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah. Kicking and screaming.
Kicking and screaming, having a ball, beach balls going back and forth. But yeah, I think there is this issue of an elitism stuck in the NASA mentality.
Yeah.
If you're not an engineer, you don't get to be part of it.
Yeah. I know.
The idea that only engineers have good ideas is scary. And the idea that average folks can't look forward to going without having to go through this massive multi-year training investment.
Wow.
I mean, that's what we saw with all of the cargo specialists and experimental people that went up with the space station or to the space station and on the space shuttle. They had to go through months and months of training to get ready to go. And I sometimes wonder just how much of that is actually necessary.
Wow.
And you look at airliners today. the airline companies have made that kind of travel very, very safe. I mean, despite the wrecks we're hearing about today.
Right, but considering number of flights, sure number of flights are out there.
It's just, it's incredible. But see, this is just it. They kept it simple. And this is where I think NASA makes its mistakes. It takes an engineering approach to everything instead of trying to keep it simple. Mm. And so many things get overcomplicated. Not that rocket science isn't complicated to begin with. It is. But once you're in a position on the ISS, the most complicated thing you've got to really worry about is an air leak. And repairing that can be as simple as throwing a patch at the wall. How many of us has thrown a big piece of rubber up at the wall and watched it dribble down the wall like a big green slimy chunk of
goo? Reminds
me
of the Looney Tunes.
Yeah.
You know, with their black dot that they used to pick up on one thing and throw up against the wall.
And then stretch it into a big doorway.
Yeah,
or a
yeah,
hole,
yeah,
so.
Yeah.
I do think, though, that even though I spotted this, and even though this one hit me like a ton of bricks, I think we're seeing a lot of change. Sadly, it doesn't look like NASA's going to be included in the long term. I think NASA as an organization is headed for administration oblivion to become a regulatory agency.
Well, I think that was part of the intention when they,
were created?
When they retired the shuttle. I mean, what else?
No. They're building the SLS, or at least they're trying to. Although, you know, there's been a lot of talk about Congress forcing the SLS on them. You know what the SLS is, right?
No.
Space Launch System.
Okay. And?
It's a BFR, big freaking rocket.
Now that I understand.
Okay.
Big freaking rocket.
Big freaking rocket. Launches bigger and bigger and bigger things into orbit to add to the junk that's already there.
Well, hopefully we actually get through. Way through all that junk.
Well, it's been a great night. We've talked about a lot of things.
You're going to go over your long list of stuff that I've been putting all these things out, just other things that we've talked about where is it? It's just a long list.
Oh, the opportunities to participate.
Yes, your opportunities to participate. Other ongoing news.
It's not so much ongoing news as much as it is ways to kind of tap into the thing that's going on out there. The Mars Society has two different Mars habitat analog stations. One in it's Nova Scotia, and one in Utah. And these, they actually run crews through these on a regular basis every year to test and experiment what it would be like to live on Mars. Also, we have NASA has the Asteroid Grand Challenge. We have gift ideas that we like to share, both for kids and for adults. What else do we got here? Oh, Mars Initiative is still looking for volunteers and staff and so forth. Check out their website, Mars Initiative. Celestial Sods. We get a kick out of this one every time.
Yeah, we do.
Brewery introduced a Planets beer series based on there's an old classical piece from a composer called Holst, Holstz, I think, who created a series of compositions about each of the planets. I love the Mars one. It's an awesome piece. But these suds, there's seven different beers named for each of the seven planets they represent. The Boy Scouts have a Boy Scout Space Exploration series of merit badges and a handbook to go with them. your make your own spaceship too. All sorts of models and paper rockets that you can build and construct. Games. Orbiter is a free and realistic spaceflight simulation program for the Windows PC. Check out Wikipedia. Look up Orbiter. It'll give you as well as the links that we're putting up.
I'm just putting those links up now.
Yeah.
So at the end of those.
But you know, there are boatloads of ways to participate, to study. If you're out there and looking at ways to generate a program to encourage students to look at STEM, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. I myself have several projects that we have done that. WAD Media, we constructed our own trebuchet with a 16-foot sling arm. I mean, this
weapon
thing is monstrous.
Weapon of destruction.
Yep, that's our own tender, loving Black Scorpion. Of which, actually, this last summer, I built a much smaller one, the Black Scorpion.
The baby scorpion.
Mama had our baby scorpion.
Yeah, I don't want to think
little...
about it. Scorpion is my least favorite animal in the entire freaking world. And Jose Dewey built a huge one.
But over the last several years, in cooperation with the Moon Society, I actually constructed a simulated rover.
Yes, yeah.
Pair.
Yeah.
Where people could actually, we put this on a tarp and cover it up, and it had cameras on it, and you used remote control, and the idea was you actually had to control it from a computer screen where you were
right.
watching this
right.
thing come in, and it was received very well. The kids really liked it. The adults even liked it even more, because it was pretty challenging to operate a rover
without
being
looking.
Able to look
yeah,
at it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so
and that's what it's all about, guys.
That's what it's all about.
Now,
we also did some things with paper rockets.
Yeah.
And stomp rockets.
Stomps. That's what was fun. We did out of the convention.
You remember the one night we were out in Mesa Second Friday, and we had that little girl come up. And I kept taunting her. I said, "You're stepping
yeah,
on that like a boy. Come on, put some oomph in it like a girl." Ultimately, she set that rocket up so high, the wind blew it off course and sent it onto a roof.
Yeah, well, actually, it was in the tree. Probably
yeah.
still in the tree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the surprising thing is that these tools, these almost toys, can teach the kids about the wonderful and exciting things that they can do
sure.
with
there's stuff from home. We're talking recyclable
from home.
Stuff.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You're talking about renewable energy.
Oh, one of the best renewable sources of energy. How about the hot air from any man?
Yeah, that's for sure. So I noticed that you did not put up one thing that we briefly talked about this before the show started. Saw the Time Magazine article of the week.
That article actually covers information disseminated last. Well, that was December 2013. Mark and Scott Kelly, both members of the Astronaut Corps.
Twins.
And I believe Scott is married to our former Arizona Congresswoman, Gabby Gifford.
Yeah.
Mark, if I remember right, Mark is going up onto the ISS. Scott is going to stay here. And what NASA is going to do is compare their progress over the course of a year. What changes are going on between the two men, how they're changing differently, what are they truly experiencing that is the same, what are they experiencing that is different.
With
and
the
I
aging
understand,
process.
Yeah, and okay. I understand that there are aspects of, a lot of aspects of their entire lives are going to be monitored, checked, and cross-checked against each other. To see what the differences are
understand
in their activities
that, yeah.
on Earth
yeah.
and in space.
Yeah, I should be curious.
It will be. And the Time Magazine, I think you spotted the Time
yes,
Magazine on the stands today.
Yep.
With the cover article talking about just this event.
Yeah,
so
it caught my eye.
Check that out online or in the book.
Or in the magazine.
Definitely worth reading if you're a fan of manned space travel.
As we are, of course.
And with that,
and here at the next space show with Al and Joe.
Al and Joe.
On KWOD Radio.
Where we discuss the progress of manned spaceflight news this week and every week on Sunday night. We welcome you and encourage you to join us. And leave you tonight.
Bring your friends next time.
And we leave you with something that calls out the rogue in all of us. The pirate, the maverick that we all admire and love to hate often and hate to compete with, that's for sure. To everyone tonight, be safe, be bad, and be good at it.
With that, we're signing out. I already looked at the calendar, so for those who like to know more about the calendar, the WOD.net is back up after a couple of, probably a day or so of being down. And so we, there's a calendar on there with all the different events, especially here in Arizona, that we'd like to feature. So definitely take a look at the calendar on the WOD.net. Also, you know, come on by and swing on by at the convention in Mary Jane, Arizona, Comic-Con to say hi. We will be there. Both of us, actually. Amazing, too, because we rarely go anywhere together. Yeah.
Not much anymore.
No. We're all doing our own thing, man. So, with that, I'm going to say goodnight, and we'll be back here next Sunday at 7 p.m., same bat channel, same bat time.
Next week is what, the 27th, right?
25th.
Or 25th?
Yeah.